Right, well, welcome back, folks. I don't know which of you pissed off some vengeful deity how, but there's like 2 feet of snow outside right now. I was late because the roads were bad, which isn't fun in early May. But I'm excited to be here, and I'm especially excited because it's not just Dan and I again. We have a special guest this week. We have Noah Crockett. Noah, give a brief... We'll go a little bit more into your background in just a moment. Just a brief introduction of yourself really quick.
I'm Noah. I go to East. I ride with Pink Boys on Maybird. I coach the Blue Girls. And yeah, I love being here. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
Beautiful. How long have you been with Maybird?
I've been with Maybird the last 2 years. Three years.
And how long have you been riding?
I've been actually riding since about eighth grade year. I learned to bike when I was four, but you know, we won't count that. So
yeah, just so you know, the Crocketts are a biking family. The dad is Jake super fast. He's really fast.
I think he would like to think so.
He is fast. He's different level than I am.
You have some siblings, some younger siblings?
I do. Right? I have three younger brothers.
So this is the beginning of a dynasty here, right?
Kind
of.
And they're all really fast.
Okay.
And they all...
No pressure, younger Crockett brothers, but...
I get a ride with one regularly, and he's really... They're all speedy, so...
Well, this is cool. This is cool. Like I said, in a moment, we'll have you go over your background a little bit more. We had a really cool opportunity for some Maybird riders on Friday. We had a group of Maybird riders go and ride with the best mountain biker in the world.
Yes.
I can say that right now. Now, that title changes regularly, but Haley Batten just won both the cross country and the short track at the last round of the World Cup in Arusha, Brazil. So I do feel comfortable saying she is the best mountain biker in the world right now. Park City native, no longer lives in Utah, I believe, correct?
Yeah, I think she lives in California.
I think she lives in California, but a Park City NICA alum. Mm-hmm. How did you get to go to that, Dan? Because I had to work.
No, I didn't go to it. Bart actually said I could go, but
Your e-bike was in the shop and, you know.
It was just such a super cool opportunity for these kids. So the legendary Bart Gillespie was actually Haley's skills coach. Wow. Early in her career.
That's why she's so good.
Exactly.
Yeah, really learning from the best right there. And they're just, ever since then, they've just been super close friends. And Bart was able to arrange it with her, and which is like really surprising that, because she's like, right now when you're like, if you're a World Cup athlete, your training demands and training schedule is very, very tight.
Yeah.
That she would be able to find time in her training program to be able to ride with a bunch of boys, you know, and I think that's just super awesome. They did like Lost Lad and bobsled and I guess just kind of rode at a pretty chill pace. Like she was able to talk to him the whole time. They were asking her questions about her training and she was answering and everyone that went basically said it was life changing.
Yeah. Well, I should just say, like, if you're listening to this and you're new to cycling and like the World Cup doesn't mean a whole lot to you yet. Like I'm trying to think of a way to illustrate. It's basically like if you race at the World Cup, you are one of the best 100 athletes in the world. Maybe one of the best 50 athletes in the world doing elite World Cups. Like doing an elite World Cup is a huge, huge deal. Coming in top 10 at an elite World Cup is a huge, huge deal. Podiuming at an elite World Cup is a huge deal. Winning an elite World Cup literally means you are the best. That means on that day, nobody could ride a mountain bike faster than Haley Batten. Of all, 8 billion people on the planet? That's really, really cool. Like, that's cool that she's from here, let alone would come and, like, ride with us. So, I mean, not that she listens to this, but just I'll send into the universe a thank you to Haley Batten for doing that. A thank you for Bart to Bart for organizing it. A life-changing opportunity.
So other news we've got, this is going to be a big weekend coming up, really big weekend. We've got the Pan American Championship and the Soldier Hollow Bike Festival this weekend, which is going to be super cool. In fact, you know, if you get a chance, even if you're not racing, you should go up and watch some of the races, you know, especially probably like, you know, watch some of the other Maybird riders race. Even like the pro races on Sunday. I mean, it's a perfect Mother's Day activity, But
that's every mother's dream, is to watch a bunch of people in Lycra go ride in a dusty circle up at a ski resort.
Yeah. But because there's a hope that one day Soldier Hollow will be a World Cup venue.
I mean, this is kind of a test event for that.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think one of the criteria there is how good the turnout is. So,
hey, show up, be loud.
Yeah.
Come cheer.
So super excited for that. We've also got the Mesa Verde race coming up the same weekend, which is kind of a bummer that they're happening the same time. Because
it's really going to split the pro group right in half, you know. Like,
but we have a lot of Maybird riders at both events. I'm just exhausted thinking about it. I'm going to try to split my time between the two. I'm going to be at the races Friday and try to get up there and do Mesa Verde Saturday, come back Sunday. So be driving like a zombie. But Joe's going to be the one mostly covering Soldier Hollow.
Holding, so thanks for down. Doing it.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Making sure those water bottles are full and clean. And
you owe me some burritos, but
we'll
discuss my terms later. So definitely go to one or both. Mesa Verde is super cool. One of my favorite
events. I love Mesa Verde.
And super, super cool.
We have a lot of riders at both events. Like, we're going to,
make sure your kits are washed up, ready to go. You know, show up in your pink skin suits if you've got them.
Or your USA kit if you're wearing that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah. Or whatever, you know, like, yeah.
But as far as Mesa Verde goes, I guess Andrew Preston and Ben Bigwood are going to do a duo. And they're going for the win, which... if I was a betting man, I'd say the odds are pretty decent. And so, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there. I'll take you guys out for Rich's Burger if you guys win it. So,
sweet. Okay. There you go.
You can come, Joe.
I can tag along.
Yeah.
Yeah. You owe me a few burgers after this week. Other than local, any other local news you want to run over?
It's going to be wet and rainy this week. So if you're a coach, try and get out if you can. Get creative. I mean, I think most rides might just happen towards the end of the week.
In cycling world news, I do want to throw out the Giro started, first Grand Tour of the year. It's going to be the Tadej Pogačar show. Nobody else is even remotely close to his level. He's going for the Giro Tour double, which hasn't been done since Pantani in the 90s. I don't know that he'll do it because I don't think he can beat Vingegaard at the Tour, but... it's a kind of cool historic thing that we're watching, that someone does have a credible shot at winning two Grand Tours in one season. So maybe tune in, or at least watch the highlights. I think it'll still be interesting. Pogačar won the stage today after crashing at the base of the climb. Crashed at the base of the climb, lost his computer, didn't have power, and came back to win by 27 seconds without being able to pace his power, which is crazy. And just kind of goes to show how far above the level of everybody else on the planet he is right now. Other than that,
how far apart is the Giro and the Tour?
It's a big handful of weeks. The Tour starts in, I think it's 6 to 8 weeks in between the two. So it's hard. Like, that, you can't
how
be
how big
the best
is the Giro compared to the Tour?
Commercially or cycling
importance? Just how many days and stuff?
Oh, it's the exact same.
They're
both 3 weeks with two rest days. Okay. So that's crazy, right?
That just blows my mind.
I don't think
people can do that.
I'm going to throw out, I'm going to be a hater. I don't think I'm the biggest Pogačar stan on the planet. I don't think he can do it. I don't think anybody will ever be able to do it again in the modern era. I think the level is too high. You'd have to have somebody who was literally in a tier of their own. And while I think Pogačar and Vingegaard are in a tier that's just the two of them, it's still the two of them.
If Vingegaard is injured.
I was going to say, with the caveat, something could happen. Vingegaard could crash, get sick, whatever. I think assuming both of them are healthy and upright, I think Pogačar wins the Giro, Vingegaard wins the Tour. And I think Pogačar is strategically doing the Giro so that he can still win a Grand Tour this year, because I think he knows the early season indications from Vingegaard is that he's going to be even better than last year. So
right.
I'm going to throw that out. I'd love to be wrong. I'd be so stoked to be wrong, but I don't think it can be done.
Okay.
So there you go. Moving on, I'm actually really excited about this. If we don't have any other,
I don't think
anything
we,
else
did
to,
you,
to touch
you
on.
Anything where
sounds good to me. I think that's it. Yeah.
So maybe a little longer form introduction. So what's your cycling story? We'll start with that.
Okay. Well, I started actually training the summer leading into my freshman year, when COVID hit, you know, I decided I had nothing to do, so why not go ride? And I would start, I started training a decent amount. I didn't ride like 6-7 days a week. I did probably 4 or 5. I know. I need to step it up a little bit, but ever since then, yeah, I've loved biking. I love racing. I think it's a blast. So,
did you have an athletic background prior to this?
I've been mountain biking basically my whole life. Right. And I did our high school team my 7th and 8th grade year before I started training. And I've just done like various other sports. I never was like super into any of them until I did. You know, until I got into mountain biking. So yeah, now I love it.
It's my favorite. This is pretty, and what, so are you a junior, senior? Or?
I'm a senior.
You're a senior.
So I just finished my last Nike year.
Okay.
That's awesome.
So what's next for you?
I'll be going on a mission, actually. I'm going to Mexico City.
No way. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited. I leave August 7th, so I have a little bit of summer, but not too much. And yeah, it'll be fun. I'm excited.
How's your Spanish?
It's not great. It's in the works. I took 2 years of high school Spanish, but you know.
Well, so did I. So there you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Did you really?
I did. There was a girl I liked who sat next to me both years. So I learned, I was trying to think what zero is in Spanish, but that kind of illustrates my point pretty well.
well, not, that's nada, isn't it?
There you go. I learned nada.
Boom.
In mi clase de español. Oh, look at this. Not how you say that either. That's very exciting for you.
Thank you.
This is interesting. So we were talking. Dan said that you're coming on because you'd done a research project about Amp Human.
That's correct.
And this threw me for a loop because I was like for fun or for school? I was like, is this like a science thing? But you told me that you took an AP research class.
Yes, that's right. It's the second year it's been at our school. Yeah, it's called AP Research. There's a prerequisite to it called AP Seminar. And what you kind of do in that class is you are given kind of outlines for 2 research projects. You have like a source packet and you need to kind of derive your own topic or question from those sources. But then for AP research, you get to spend a whole year. All you do is one paper and one presentation, and you get to research whatever you want. And the only really guideline around that is it has to be research that's never been done before. So you're filling kind of a gap in that research. And it's pretty interesting. And it was my favorite class this year by far. I loved it.
Was it hard to find something that hadn't been researched before?
Initially, I kind of thought it would be. And when I decided that I wanted to do something specifically about biking and sodium bicarbonate, which I'm sure we'll get into. It was pretty easy. You kind of just dive into the research and you're reading a lot about it and you're reading a lot of papers and eventually you kind of find themes and you're like, well, this has never been done. I mean, I could do that and this has never been done. And I mean, for mine, I found a few things that hadn't been done. So I kind of wove those together.
So like what topics were kids choose? Was it a lot of like Good Morning America science? Like, is a glass of wine and a bar of chocolate before bed as good as exercising? Oh, new study says maybe, right? Or is it so what are kids like choosing to do?
There was a couple people that did movies. There was a bunch of gender studies.
Movies? Yeah. They
researched movies, yeah. So I had a friend that...
That sounds like an easy way out. No, exactly. I'm not going to lie.
No, I agree with you for sure. And I think that's a pretty common one. Like, there's this movie called Mother, and this kid was analyzing, you know, like, how does it affect different demographics?
That's awesome.
I know, yeah.
That would have been me.
How would movies make you faster? That's what I'm trying to say.
That's the root of all science.
I think so, yeah.
Is how to make an emaciated guy on a bicycle go up a hill faster. Exactly. That's the sum total of humans, yeah. Yep. Okay, so, like, were there some other interesting ones in your class, though?
Yeah, there was one that was... the person I sat next to all year, we were kind of sitting next to people who had similar topics. She was doing sports medicine and she was looking at like a syndrome present in like female cross country runners. And that was kind of like similar enough to mine that I was like, oh, this is an interesting topic. Like I could get into this. And a lot of the kids in this class kind of do more, you know, qualitative.
Was it Red
survey.
S or something?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. It was Red S. And yeah, it kind of derived from like LEA, low energy availability syndrome. Which was a really interesting topic. And a lot of the kids in the class do more qualitative research, you know, like survey research.
Mm.
And so the ones that were doing, you know, like quantitative science-based research, which is what I was doing, kind of, you know, struck harder with me. And I was like, well, I'm going to, you know, stick with these kids. And so that kind of stuck out to me.
You seem to be a very nice person, but I'm going to ask you to put that to the side for just a second. Be a hater.
Yeah.
What was the dumbest project that someone did?
So there's actually
don't listen to this. I promise.
Like, okay. No, they definitely.
This is
don't.
A safe space. Yeah.
So
not many people do. So you can get away with saying a lot here.
Yeah, exactly. This person actually was in the other AP research class from mine, so not even in my class, but I heard about their topic. It was something about, like, how does watching Fight Club make boys mean or something? And I was like,
no, wait, I think,
you know, this actually, isn't my, this wait, is not my kind of research.
Wait, that's actually kind of interesting.
Did, like, they just put a bunch of, like, rats in a cage with Fight Club going and see which one kills someone first?
Would love to know the answer to that. I'm not sure.
I would think it kind of does make you mean. Just, yeah, that's just my,
maybe it does, hypothesis. You know, I never got too interested to find out, so.
Okay. Maybe get her paper and we'll talk about it next week.
Exactly.
It's like there, like Google Scholar. Episode. Like, they've got, like, all their sources cited and stuff. If somebody can, how about this? If somebody can cite that research study in a research paper of their own, I'll give them $20.
I'll give them $20 on top of that.
Okay, that's $40.
If I'll give them $5 on top of
that. $45 if somebody can. Why did you, like, undercut us for $5, Dan? Like,
trying to get the bid? I don't know.
Tires are getting expensive these days. Like, okay.
That's not wrong.
But this is interesting. So how many hours did you put into this?
Oh, man, too many.
Watching Fight Club increase testosterone?
Oh, there you go.
Ooh,
you'd better hope so, Dan.
You could tie that to biking, I mean.
Because then there might be some.
They could do that. Somebody could test positive for Fight Club doping.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, they're walking up to the start line and, like, a VHS case falls out of their bag and it's a scandal. <Uh-oh>. And,
like, makes world news, you know.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know how it got there. I only watch Fight Club recreationally.
Exactly, like, yeah.
Wow. So this was a fairly large undertaking for it. And how did you?
It was.
Because Amp Human, if you're not familiar, really, I guess, really, what's the elevator pitch and what Amp Human is? Because I've used it before. I was given a sample of it one time.
So Amp Human is actually from Park City. They're a local company. They were founded by a football lineman, which is kind of interesting. I found that out as I was learning more about them. But what they do is they make, you know, various human performance products. And specifically the one I was researching is called PR Lotion. PR stands for performance and recovery, and it's this baking soda based lotion. And I used it before. I think I used it in seventh or eighth grade, back when it was in one of their older, big, tall gray bottles. I don't know if you've
what year were you in seventh or eighth grade?
Oh, like what year? That was 2018 and 2019.
Yep. Okay. So that's when I think that's probably when they were, like, getting it launched. When I was working for Backcountry, they gave everybody a thing.
Yeah.
And they were like, here's the, and it smelled really weird. Oh, and, like,
it does not smell good at all.
Made your legs shiny.
It made your legs look good, actually.
Makes your legs look nice. Feels kind of weird at first, and rubbing it on is kind of a pain. But that was the year they, like, really started rolling out their, I found out about Amp Human from a Strava club or Strava challenge sort of deal. And I was like, oh, what's this? And
so was the impetus for this that you were, like, did you go in as, like, I've used this forever and I like it, or, like, I'm kind of skeptical about this? Is it your dad's friend who makes it? Like, what's your background? Why this particular product?
Kind of a mixture of all of those. So I was interested in doing something about cycling, and then I was kind of interested in doing something about cycling performance. And, you know, something that's been used a lot in cycling historically is baking soda or sodium bicarbonate.
Right.
And, you know, people ingest that and it gives you GI distress, to say the least. And so I was like, oh, well, you know, let's look and see if there's other options. There's the Jumbo Visma's, or I guess Visma Lisa bike now.
Ooh, I missed it. It's okay.
Their primary nutrition sponsor released their bicarb system, which uses, you know, baking soda, but it doesn't get rid of GI distress. And I was like, well, let's look around and see what I can find. And there's, you know, this Amp Human lotion. And I was like, well, I think I've used that before.
Yeah.
And so, and then I was like, well, does it really work? You know, how well does it work? Does it work in aerobic performance like it does for anaerobic performance? Or, like, what's its specialty? So
let's, like, back up just a little bit here. Because we're talking about baking soda and, like, why would baking soda make you faster? That's, and, like, before you rush and try it, there's huge, you know, there's some benefits and there's some huge drawbacks to baking soda. But let's first of all kind of establish, because that sounds kind of crazy. Like, why would baking soda be like performance enhancing? Because it really is. It's one of the few proven legal performance enhancing supplements you can take, and on a really, really short list. Like, basically, caffeine and baking soda.
I mean,
and the others on that list aren't nearly as high up on that list. But let's first talk about, like, kind of back up a little bit, and talk about, like, why it would be needed. Let's first talk about, like, lactate, like So we've talked about lactate before in this podcast.
I think it's been a while, though. And I think the kind of like colloquial understanding of like lactate is you hear people like, oh, like my legs burn. I've got lactic acid or whatever. Like people talk about it as like a thing that causes discomfort after a hard bike ride. Right. Yeah.
And there's some nuance there. I mean, it kind of does, but it's not actually the lactate. But let's, so first of all, like what is lactate and why does it need buffering, I guess?
Exactly. Okay.
What is buffering?
And, yeah.
Yeah.
So lactate or lactic acid, you know, builds up in your legs when you're, it's a product, to get technical, of anaerobic glycosis. So when you're pedaling hard and you're burning, you know, your glycogen stores in your legs, what you're doing is you're creating a byproduct of that, which is lactic acid. And that can cause, you know, pain and fatigue in your muscles. It also just like increases the speed at which you're, like when you're exercising hard, you're creating small muscle tears, you know, and that's how you build up muscle. It can increase the rate at which you create those muscle tears. And so what lactate buffering does is it kind of offsets that lactic acid buildup and lactic acid, not production, but you build up to a point where it causes that pain and that lessening of your performance. And so what it does is you'll take, if you remember from chemistry, you have your acids and your bases or your alkalines, and they neutralize each other. And so they
like baking soda and vinegar.
Exactly.
You get all the bubbles and then it kind of, it's like a neutral solution.
Exactly.
That, right?
Yeah. So okay. You're balancing the pH of those two things.
Got it.
So baking soda is a base or an alkaline. So it can offset that lactic acid, and buffer that and make it so, you know, you don't have all the performance negative side effects, which is an interesting way to put it when you're talking about something that occurs naturally, of lactic acid when it builds up in your legs.
So that makes sense. So you've got an acid in your legs, like vinegar is an acid, yep. And then baking soda and vinegar, it's the same process,
they
right?
They balance each other, exactly, okay. And become neutral.
Okay.
Yeah. And so one way people would do that is they'd, you know, pour a base, like baking soda, into a drink mix and drink it. But if you think about it, you have stomach acid, right?
Okay, I was just going to say, yep. So like when you drink things, it doesn't go immediately to your legs,
right?
Like unless you have some problems.
Yeah, oh yeah, that would be bad news.
So when you say causing gastrointestinal distress, isn't because like Tums is the same thing, right? Yeah. You take Tums because it's a base, because you've got like, your stomach acid making your stomach hurt, right? So yeah. is it like taking 20 Tums at once or something?
Probably, you know, that'd be another research
that could
project
be,
to
that
do
could
is,
be ours. We could just have Danny
how many
a ton
tums?
Of Tums and yeah. See what happens.
Exactly. So what it'll do is some people don't have any side effects. That's pretty rare. Most people have some. And really you don't want, you know, GI distress, especially during like a 6-hour bike race.
Oh yeah.
Or even during an hour bike race, like you don't want to stain your bib shorts with.
Yeah, because I think the GI distress comes in the form of either gas or diarrhea.
Yep. Right.
And like
both of
bloating.
Those will not help you go faster.
Yeah.
Even in the days leading up to a race or like after a race, when you need to be eating before a race or eating to recover after a race or eating during the race, like anything that screws with your ability to eat.
Right.
Is
for
bad,
sure.
Right.
Yeah. And it'll cause like bloating and cramping in your stomach. And I've heard instances where it'll cause even cramping in your legs, which is interesting.
Huh.
You know, throwing up.
Right.
That will happen too, because I mean, if you take too much of it, obviously it's just going to, you know, like the vinegar and baking soda volcano.
You're
going to
be a volcano. Yeah. You don't want to be a volcano during.
So my dumb next question, I guess, for both of you guys is like, are people like injecting base solutions into their legs to like bypass
the gut
or like?
I mean, people have been using sodium bicarbonate for a long time as an aid in performance, but they've just decided that the buffering capabilities outweigh the advantages of that outweigh the gastric distress.
Okay, that would have to be
pretty severe.
Huge benefit to life.
And it really is, and we'll talk about this more in a second, but it really depends on like the duration of the events and
right.
You know, there's some situations where it could be beneficial, other way situations where it would just be detrimental. One thing I think is kind of cool about the whole sodium bicarbonate thing is because with lactate, like lactate kind of gets a bad name because like when lactate's produced at a 1-to-1 ratio, there's some hydrogen ions that are produced at the exact same time, which is where the acidity comes from. The lactate is a very good, useful substance that your body produces. It's used as a fuel, like your fast twitch muscles produce it, your slow twitch muscles use it. These hydrogen ions that are created at the exact same time are bad. You know, and sometimes they get kind of lumped together, but those are what the bicarbonate's actually trying to neutralize. And so By neutralizing those hydrogen ions, your body's actually able to use more of the lactate in its useful form. You know, so it's a fuel for your slow twitch muscles and so forth. So that's kind of another cool benefit of acid buffering and why these products could be beneficial. So
PR lotion stands for performance recovery.
Yes.
I understand the recovery portion. Is this something you're putting on after a bike ride or like before?
You can, yeah. What's
the intended use?
It's both, actually. Okay. So they recommend you put it on 30 minutes before you complete like a bike race or an exercise or whatever it may be. And then it's been used also as recovery lotion. So after you ride, you know, you shower off, whatever, and then you put it on your legs and it helps you recover. And it improves delayed onset muscle soreness. So it can improve your recovery time, but I think the most common use for it is active performance improvement.
And I would agree there too, because my understanding of lactate is usually your system will either utilize it or within like 30 or 40 minutes after an effort, you know, it doesn't stay around for a long time. So I think it's mostly useful before. I've actually heard that it's almost the massage effect after, because you were mentioning it's really hard to rub it.
Yeah.
I've actually heard that like the benefits of using it after is more from the actual massaging it in rather than it getting rid of any excess lactic, I mean, air quotes, acid after your event, because that usually, in my understanding, isn't really the cause of DOMS. It's that's more from like muscle damage and so forth. But I think it's definitely something that's used more before.
So is the theory that it's like sodium bicarbonate suspended in a lotion that seeps into your muscles instead of you having to ingest it? Is that exactly the basic idea?
Yeah, so they call it their transdermal delivery system, meaning goes through your skin and into your blood. And that was another one of the big questions I had was, does it actually do that, or is it just the placebo effect?
And that was my biggest question for you today is like, how does it actually, and how much actually goes through your skin and into your muscles and into your bloodstream?
Because we've talked about this before, that this is like a really fraught thing that like with supplements or whatever, that like supplements vary from work as intended to are actively bad for your health. And a lot of them kind of fall into this middle zone of like, you might be buying a bottle of nothing that's going to do nothing for you.
Exactly.
Like, so on the kind of good, I mean, maybe just to kind of skip to the end here, like on the kind of good, bad, does nothing in the middle, waste of money spectrum, where did your research indicate
that? Or what was your hypothesis going on?
Going into it, because I'm listening to this, I'm like, okay, why not just mix some baking soda into some of the lotion that's on my countertop right now and just like rub it into my legs?
Yeah, I mean,
what were your thoughts going into this?
My thoughts going into it were that, yeah, it would improve performance. And to get too technical, I said 2 to 6% in your power performance. And 6% it was. Not all participants had that, for sure. I only had 6 participants.
Okay.
I can get into that later, too, as I go.
Yeah, we'll talk about your research. How he did his experiment in a sec.
But you kind of came in assuming there would be, because 6% is not nothing.
Not at all. No. Yeah.
Like that's a pretty significant, pretty,
especially
like,
for your power. For, output. Yeah.
In certain type of efforts too.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. But talk more about like, how does it get from your skin into your bloodstream? That's the part I've always kind of,
I still am not sure. They have some ingredients in their lotion that I think make it easy for it to seep into your skin like lotion. They have just like some typical lotion ingredients. Don't even know the names of the ingredients, but I was comparing this bottle, you know, next to a bottle of like Vaseline.
You took a sodium bicarbonate bath, would that?
Well, because I remember like hearing when I was a kid, like growing up, say like, don't draw with Sharpie on your skin because it seeps into your bloodstream. Like, does everything you put on your skin eventually either fall off or seep into your bloodstream? Like, or is there something special about this that makes, like, when I put lotion on my legs after I shave them, this is a cycling podcast, so like, safe space. Is that's being absorbed into my skin, right? But not necessarily making it to my bloodstream, I imagine, because that wouldn't, how does that, do you know, did like, does, is this beyond the scope of your research here?
This is beyond my knowledge. Okay.
I mean, I do know.
Why do we even invite you? Like,
what am I doing? I mean, I do know some things will seep in through your skin into your blood. So I just don't know like how much. And like what percentage of that sodium bicarbonate on your legs actually makes it in, or.
Which is probably the reason they have you put on so much at once is so the majority, like a greater percentage of it can make it into your blood. I'm not sure how it gets there.
Hmm. But that's the essential pitch, right? Is that right. Instead of ingesting this, you can just put it directly onto your skin and it'll make it into the bloodstream.
Gastric distress, yeah.
Because when you think about it, like this could be a really big win-win, you know, because we know like the effects of sodium bicarbonate are pretty undeniable. I mean, they're like pretty sound. There's really good science behind it, but there's major drawbacks.
There's just the practical problems associated with these, right?
And if you can bypass the whole stomach thing and get that into your legs directly, I mean, that would be pretty awesome if it worked, you know?
Exactly.
So
that's what my research tried to do, yeah.
So tell us about your experiment, what you did.
Yeah.
And kind of what you found.
Yeah, so I decided, the scope of my research project was to test on high school cyclists, obviously, because I'm a high school cyclist and I love them. And I wanted to look at aerobic exercise. So a lot of the research that has been done around sodium bicarbonate is regarding anaerobic, like sprint time, ability, or like a 2-minute like time trial. That was, for some reason, a really common one that came up. Was a 2-minute time trial performance in cyclists?
That seems like a bad interval to test to me.
Right. Well, but the thing is I see why they would be testing on that, because that would probably give them better results, basically. Yeah,
exactly.
Because where it's something that's helping buffer acid that's created during glycolysis, which is higher intensity efforts. You know, I think that that would probably give them better marketing results, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's like,
because aren't most of the studies on AmpHuman financed by AmpHuman?
I think so.
Okay, and that's something you got to consider. Is like anytime a company says something, you have to remember if someone's trying to sell you something, they're not going to tell you like, oh, it doesn't work, but buy it. You know, like that's not, you're going to hear that 0% of the time, right? Nice of people like you who are doing some kind of independent looking into it.
Yeah.
So you wanted, the test you're doing is a longer effort than typically.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. So I'm testing specifically for aerobic exercise. So what I did was I had this method designed. I'm going to take all these high schoolers and I'm going to have them come in. I'm going to have two lotions. They're going to put one on. They're not going to know which is which. It's going to be either this AmpHuman sodium bicarbonate lotion, or it's just going to be a placebo. You know, it's not going to do anything.
And he got a placebo from AmpHuman.
I did. Yes. So after designing.
Oh, really? So did you reach out to them?
I did. And it was a hassle.
It was quite an effort for him to get it.
But I got it. So what they do is they'll give you, so it's a double blind study, right? So I don't know which lotion it is, and the researchers or the participants don't either. So what they did is they created a placebo lotion that has all the same ingredients except for the sodium bicarbonate.
They created this for you?
Well, they've created it before for other studies.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, this lotion you use in this study, can I use the same thing?
Okay, bravo, by the way. Just really quick. Like, let's just stop and say, yeah, like,
that's very thorough.
There is no way I would have put this kind of, I would have been in the Fight Club camp in this class. So, like, I really admire, like, that's cool reach out.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate it. But yeah, it makes researching a lot easier. And so what they'll do is they'll, you know, take their actual lotion and this fake lotion, for lack of a better term, and they'll label these bottles A and B, and they gave me 4 or 5 of each, and then they gave me like a sealed envelope, and it had the key, you know, which one's which, that I opened at the end of the research. But this made it like as unbiased as possible from my perspective and from the participants' perspective.
Right.
And so what I did was, after I got those, I had participants come in and they would do 2 ramp tests. I don't know if you guys talked about ramp tests much on this podcast.
No, let's talk about ramp tests a little bit.
We probably mentioned it, but like really quick, what's a ramp test?
Okay, so ramp test is another way to determine your FTP. I'm assuming everybody knows what FTP is. Functional threshold power. There's a lot of ways to do an FTP test. There's a 60-minute test, the 20-minute test, blood lactate test. All of those are kind of a pain. And what's nice about a ramp test is it literally ramps up your effort as you go. And so it does it 20 watts in a 1 minute increment, and it slowly increases. And basically all you need to do is you need to hop on your trainer and you set it to start on your software and you just pedal until you can't pedal anymore. And it'll stop and automatically calculate your FTP and what's called your maximal aerobic power. And that's what I was specifically looking at, was maximal aerobic power in my research.
What's the difference between maximal aerobic power and FTP?
So FTP is generally you're like 20 to what, like 60 minute power. I don't know the specifics too much on FTP, but maximal aerobic power is the highest 1 minute of power you can sustain after doing aerobic exercise.
Oh, okay.
So what it does is it takes, you know, just your last 60 seconds and it averages your power, and that's your maximal aerobic power.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and like usually the ramp test software will take that and then just take a percentage of that exactly. to estimate your FTP.
So right. It's generally like 70 to 78% yeah. of that is your FTP.
Which is cool. Ramp tests, like the ramp tests are cool because you can do them more frequently. Like doing a true blue by the textbook unadulterated 60 minute power test is psychologically catastrophic. Like oh, it's you so hard. Can't be doing it as often. A ramp test is nice because how long does a ramp test take? Like 8 or 9 minutes?
If you finish it, it takes yeah. 8 minutes.
Yeah, yeah right. Like
yeah, the actual hard part is yeah, maybe five yeah, minutes.
It sucks, but it's also like right. much more manageable. And you do. I mean, I don't know. You get good numbers, right? Yeah. Are there anybody out here saying that like ramp tests are crappy?
Oh yeah, yeah. There
so,
are.
So this is controversial.
It's not ideal.
Okay,
but it's practical.
Right. For FTP, you know. it's not
and,
as
and it, accurate yeah. I was going to say for FTP, it's not necessarily a perfect estimation of your FTP, but it's a really good estimation of fitness.
You yeah, know? Yeah, for sure. And it's perfect estimation of your MAP.
Right.
Because that's exactly what it tests for.
Right, right, right.
And so I was like, oh, this is perfect for
my research.
That's cool.
That's good on you to like choose, like, this test is going to give me a better MAP than FTP. So yeah. I'm going to focus on that.
Exactly. Okay. I just wanted more, you know, credible, reliable results from that standpoint.
Yeah, it's like basically a ramp test is a good indicator of how well you're doing at a ramp test at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
But that also is it's a really good kind of surrogate of how fit you are at that point.
For sure.
You know,
like, I like ramp tests. I think practically they're really good.
I agree.
Yeah.
They're easy to
do. I mean,
do.
If you're using a test to make your FTP, your multiplier might take a grain of salt for sure.
Right.
But I think for what you're doing, like you can tell – like if your ramp test give you a number one day versus another, I mean, you had better performance that day, yeah, basically.
So. Exactly.
So you had 6 participants, you said?
I did. I initially had 25.
Whoa.
Right. And I know. I
was this really is downside of that. Using high schoolers.
Just this is lame. No, it wasn't their fault. This is
no. Lame. Yeah. So not to cast blame.
Uh-oh.
But my school district, like a week before I decided to test, they're like, well, you can't test on minors. And I was like, oh, I have, you know, informed consent forms and I have parental permission forms. And I have all this stuff. And they're like, you can only do 18-year-old high school cyclists, which cut me down to 6.
Dude, and you couldn't, he couldn't even do older than 18, right? You could, yeah.
Nope. Wait, just 8. So like 17's bad and 19's bad.
Yeah.
Gosh, it sounds like Leonardo DiCaprio's dating rules. that's crazy. Yeah. Is it just like the lawyers stepped in and were like,
yeah, it was like, I had to, since I was doing physical testing on people, I had to go through what's called an institutional review board.
An IRB.
And yeah, exactly. And, you know, I didn't hear really anything back for months. So I was like, well, let's assume we can go forward. And then a week before, they're like, actually, it's too big of a liability for us.
That which sucks.
It does suck. And it would have been nice to have like more statistically significant results.
Right.
So my results, yeah. There are a couple of things that would have changed with my methodology overall. But before I could talk about that, I can just talk about more of like what I did for the ramp test. So I had them come in 2 days. I gave them at least 3 days in between for recovery. And what they did was they would put on one of these lotions. They put on 40 grams per leg. I don't know if you can...
You're measuring this out.
I don't know if you can picture how much 40 grams of lotion
that's,
is, but it was
that's a lot.
Ton. Like it does not rub in.
I was going to say, that wouldn't... You couldn't get that all in this...
It was strong smelling and
lotion.
Yeah, but they would apply it 30 minutes before, set a timer, and I have them start the ramp test.
Can I ask a weird question?
Yes, please.
Did anyone try to do this without shaved legs?
There were a few, actually.
Oh. Okay.
I will tell you right now, I did it without shaved legs.
Oh, really?
I stopped shaving my legs probably about January, February. And
was it messy?
It was a nightmare. Okay. I mean, like every time I would pedal and my legs would hit my frame, you know? like just covered in. Oh,
yeah, I think shaving your legs is kind of a prerequisite for Amp Human or. Yeah.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. So this is a big logistical undertaking for you. Are you going to kids' houses to do this?
Or no. Like... So I had them come in, and we just had them in like a gym, a small space.
Uh-huh.
And we just kind of, someone would bring their own trainers. We had two. Mm-hmm. And we just set them up and try to make it like I photographed the conditions to make sure mm-hmm. they're as similar as possible.
Would they use the same trainer on both tests?
Yes, they use the same trainer, and we made sure to calibrate them before, so that the power results are accurate. And then, I'd have them complete the test. And so while I was gathering, their power data, their MAP, their maximum aerobic power, I also gathered their RPE, the rate of perceived exertion.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would do is I held up, just a 1 to 10 chart. And I would, every 3 minutes, I'd ask them how they were feeling. And
that's
so,
hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
That's really funny.
It was kind of brutal. Like, once you get to, towards the end of the test and they can't talk, and, they just, hold up and, or they, hit the clipboard and just try to tell me what number they're feeling. But it was interesting because what I got was, both their physical data and then I got their psychological data. Because
that would be an interesting finding if they're like, oh, this makes me feel better, but the power stays the same. Is that what you were looking
for? One of the participants, I won't name names, had the exact same maximal, down to the watt, exact same maximal aerobic power both times. But with the sodium bicarbonate lotion, they had an easier, RPE. So
interesting.
Why couldn't they have gone more then?
I don't know. Yeah, that's why it's an interesting question.
And I don't know if you remember, was it the first or second test that they felt better on?
It was the second test they felt better on.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So
I wonder if some of that might be just because they knew what they were expecting to.
Yeah.
And
yeah. And that's another thing I would have changed along with having way more participants for more statistical significance.
Is maybe having three tests and one of them does not even count.
I would have had three tests, and the first they wouldn't have used a lotion. It would have just been to get familiar with it, how it feels,
right?
How long it is, how hard it is, that kind of deal.
Were these experienced cyclists?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I sent out a form beforehand, and I had some criteria where, these people, if they don't meet these requirements, I'm not going to let them test.
So if you just, your friend Gary, who doesn't, he's not on the mountain bike team, you're not going to let him test. These are
amazed, given his constraints, I was amazed he was able to get as many
18-year-old
experienced athletes that...
I had to give some motivational reminders, please do my test. But so they had to have 300 hours or more per year of training. And they had to give me a 4 or 5 out of 5 of comfort on an indoor trainer.
Okay.
Otherwise I wouldn't let them test. So,
wow.
Just had to make sure they were highly trained and comfortable in an indoor environment while testing.
So none of these people were I've never done anything like this before.
Right,
or I've never. So these are kids where they're like, oh yeah, I've done an FTP test. Yeah. I've spun on the trainer a lot.
Exactly. You'd consider them highly trained.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But non-elite.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you would know all of these people.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Good researcher. We're not going to name names. Right?
Exactly.
But
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
So,
this is what I'm trying to poke holes in this and I'm having a hard time. You did a really good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, he dotted his I's and crossed his T's. I hate it when I almost say that wrong, dotting your T's and
crossed your I's. And
okay. I guess I's do have crosses, like the capital ones.
Oh, there you go.
Dan's literacy hour over here. We've got one guy over here, we're testing glycolysis in this group of, and Dan's like, I's have crosses in them. That's how long did this take end to end? Just
I honestly don't how long did the actual research
how many hours did you clock on this research project, do you think?
I couldn't tell you. A lot. There were a lot of nights where I was just complaining nonstop, why won't they let me test more people? Why can't I get this placebo from this guy? Why is he being so mean? Whatever it was, but
so did Amp Human, how cooperative were they with this?
Not as cooperative as I would like to give them credit for. They did end up helping me. It was kind of a long process of how do I even explain it? The guy asked for my study design, and I sent him my study design, and then I didn't get an email back for a couple months, and so I emailed him a couple times during this, and I eventually emailed the CEOs of the company.
Oh my god.
I went for the throat. And right after they emailed me back, I get an email from this guy. And he said, you never sent me your study design. I was like, then I don't know what you're asking for. Eventually, he was kind of a pain to work with, I'm going to be honest. And there are a lot of specifics that he wanted me to cover that I was like, I'm not experienced. I don't even know what that means.
I'm a high school kid doing a project.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And in the end, I went and met him in person and I picked up the product and I was a little scared, I'm gonna be honest. But yeah. he was a super nice guy.
Okay. He was in Park City.
Yeah, they were in Park City in their new headquarters. But yeah, they gave me all their products and it worked out just fine. It was a process to get there, but like, yeah, they ended up supporting it.
Because that's such an interesting dynamic where it's like, for them, they're having to decide, like, do we want to let this kid do this?
No, exactly. And I can't blame them for that at all.
I want to be able to do this in an unbiased way. I don't be like, hey, you did me a favor by getting me this stuff. Yeah. I'm going to say nice stuff about you now.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's sort of weird where you have to be like, I need you to kind of do me a favor.
You should have asked him to help fund it.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. You could be a sellout.
Yeah,
exactly. That'd be cool.
So I say let's kind of skip to the results a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll give you like my hard and fast results and then I'll kind of explain them.
Okay.
Up to a 6% performance improvement as to your watts. So your maximum rotor power can improve up to 6%, maybe greater. I would hypothesize greater with greater field, but my results showed 6% performance improvement. And then as far as RPE goes, pretty significant improvement. I mean, one participant, I gathered every 3 minutes. At the 15-minute mark, it's getting pretty hard. You're starting to feel it. One participant the first time gave me a 3 out of 10 with the baking soda lotion, and then with the placebo lotion, he gave me a 6 out of 10. And so that's pretty significant. That's the difference between easy and like, there's like a little line where it was like you can guess what this means between hard and very hard.
Yeah,
and that was where 6 was. And so that's pretty significant, like psychologically, for performance improvement. And then again, we had that kid that had the exact same power the exact both times at the same time mark, but had, you know, a easier perceived output with the actual sodium bicarbonate lotion. And then I had some I had some participants that had performance decline.
Really?
Right. And most, I would say, okay, let me try to remember exactly. So 3 participants had anywhere between a 0% performance improvement and 1%. So that's 3 participants. One participant had a 6% improvement, and then 2 participants had about a 5% decline in their power.
Okay, and so this is interesting. This is why having only 6 is a problem.
Exactly.
Because you have hugely varying results.
Exactly.
There.
Which would make statistical significance easier and an average easier if I had a bigger participant pool.
Right.
But there was also some reasoning behind that.
Okay.
So one of the participants had a swim meet in between the trials.
Okay.
One of the participants used a different bike between the trials.
Okay.
Because one of the bikes just, it didn't, like, I don't, yeah, it didn't work out. And then one of the participants' headphones fell off. You know.
Okay.
So there's definitely reasons that could impact why.
And it seems like there's a lot of factors too that would be really hard.
Right.
To, like I would almost think that like their glycogen levels coming into the ramp test could have way more to do with their results than whether they're using a lotion on their leg.
Exactly.
Or not,
you know, and it can depend on hydration and on how much sleep they got the night before.
Like where you can't really control their diet and their,
and
their sleep and their, like the bike ride they did the day before and stuff. There's just
a lot of protocol.
Yeah.
Sure. I have 2 difficult questions for you.
All right. I'm ready. I think
the first one is, given 0 constraints, given all the money, all the time, as many participants as you want, how close to perfect do you think you could get this? How many confounding variables could you eliminate? Like, basically, how good could this be?
I think it could be really good.
So you think you could really, like, derive solid, like, I can confidently
I think so.
Say.
One of the big things with that would be the willingness of participants. Because what I would want to do in a perfect world, all the time, all the money, whatever, is I'd have 1 or 2 tests before no lotion to get familiar with it. And then I'd have... And this would be in a random order, of course, for the sake of good research. 2 ramp tests not back to back, but you know, the section of ramp tests where you have 2 tests with the placebo and with the actual lotion, and then you do it again with the same, and then you take the average between the 2 placebos and the average between the 2 actual lotions, and you compare. And for that reason, you get rid of comfortability bias. Where they're just getting used to the testing protocol.
Right.
Which could have happened for some of those participants that maybe weren't up to date or hadn't been fresh on a ramp test. And then you also get, you know, maybe their glycogen stores were different one day than the next. And having those two tests and averaging them, two tests for both lotion, could help eliminate those factors. So
the second half of my question, and this is the really hard half.
Uh-oh.
Can we actually learn anything from your study, or is it too small a group and there's too many confounding variables to actually say confidently, I think this about this product?
For sure. And that is like the holistic result that I have.
Yeah.
So 5 out of my 6 participants experienced some form of improvement. So whether it was their physical watts improved or whether their psychological output was better while using the lotion, 5 out of 6 of them experienced some form of performance improvement. So I think I can safely say, and just from personal experience using it, that it is an effective product at improving aerobic performance.
Okay, sub question really quick. How much does it cost? Is it worth it?
Right. A bottle varies depending on where you get it. It's generally pretty cheap and you can use it for a pretty long time. I would have to fact check the price. I'm actually not certain on that one, but it's not horribly expensive.
Like you wouldn't say.
Seems like it's around $30 to $50 a bottle.
Depending I would say so.
So I've got some questions about, so, okay. So we know it improves the result of a ramp test, which, you know, ramp tests rely a lot on at least glycolytic efforts, if not anaerobic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So obviously this product seems to have some benefit on like an 8-minute highly intensive effort, right? Would that translate to like, do you think there'd be benefits on FTP, which is more at threshold where you're not producing as much lactate?
Right. I think so. Yeah. Because you're using, so generally like a ramp test in total, including like you have like a small warm up and then you have, you know, that ramping up of your power until you get to your peak.
Yeah. So a lot of it's not glycolytic and,
right,
and
exactly.
Not anaerobic.
So you're using up a lot of your, it is an aerobic test. So it's generally like the highest time we got to was about 19 minutes total, which is an aerobic effort, right? And granted, you are burning up your glycogen stores towards the end of that when you're getting into the harder efforts. But yes, I would say it's definitely a valid tool and a valid like performance improvement tool for your FTP and for your threshold, just because those are so intense that you're going to build up lactic acid anyways. And if you're building up lactic acid, that means you can offset that lactic acid with something. And the results might be less significant. I mean, there was a study when I was going through the research that found 20% performance improvement in anaerobic power, which is huge. Yeah. Which is huge.
20%.
20% is crazy.
Like if you had a 20% improvement, you are a professional cyclist.
Right. Exactly.
Like if Dan had a 20% improvement, he could do midweeks.
Right? Ouch. Yeah. Brutal.
But that's huge. But that's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. And that was in, I think that was in 30-second repeatability of sprint power. So that's definitely not the same as having, you know, 20% improvement in your FTP. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely not going to be performance improvement to that extent, but there will still be.
Because my wonder, here's my wondering, like if you did, like if you were, because you weren't doing a test on FTP.
Right.
You were doing MAP, but if you did like a test using a ramp test to see if there was an improvement and then had it figure an FTP based on that versus an hour long FTP test.
Right.
I think using the lotion, you get a totally different result.
For sure.
I think
so.
It would definitely favor any effort that's above threshold basically.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's kind of my thing about buffering and about sodium bicarbonate. I think there's a huge benefit for above threshold efforts.
Agreed.
Probably not. Like if I were running a marathon, I wouldn't touch this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're doing short track, I think
huge.
There'd be, there's good potential for a benefit there.
I agree. And that's a big thing about it too. What was I going to say? I just completely lost my train of thought there. I was thinking about a marathon for some reason.
Ugh, don't do that.
I know. That's a bad choice. But I think, yes, using PR lotion. And that's what I was going to say. When you're going for like a longer effort, like a marathon, or like say it's Park City point to point, you're going to use up enough of the baking soda and the sodium bicarbonate and the lotion that you're going to have to reapply.
I was going to ask, how long does it last? Like,
they say generally about an hour.
Yeah, and that sounds
is about how long it lasts effectively. That's like anywhere from like 45 minutes to an hour 30. So if you're doing, you know, like a 4 hour ride, first of all, I don't know if you're going to experience a ton of performance improvement, like you were saying. You know, maybe in like some of the climbs, well, you'll be
I think
faster,
on point but, to point you would,
yeah,
because you're definitely doing a lot of, you know, like zone five, zone six right. efforts just to get up some of that stuff.
Where yeah, you're exactly.
be producing a lot of lactate. And
that's where its biggest performance improvement comes from, is from the shorter punch of your efforts. And I think it kind of follows like a curve, you know? So like over here is like the less time. And as you go down the line, it's, we're talking like a graph here, like x-axis. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Towards the zero is the shorter time. And as you go yeah. this way, it's longer time. And it's going to kind of follow a curve of performance improvement ability.
Yeah.
So as you go for longer, it's going to have less.
You start to plateau, like diminishing returns.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, exactly. So,
Are there any like generics that you're aware of?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know of any.
So because we talked about it, but like, why not just mix baking soda into lotion? And you basically, you're like, I don't know. Like they claim yeah. to have some proprietary
It'd be
technology
interesting to
that
try
makes it absorb better.
Right.
That would actually be an interesting follow-up
there
study.
You go.
Would be just to like make your own, you know,
make your own and try it.
Yeah. Exactly. See how it works.
So was there any evidence of anybody having any negative, like any indication that this was reducing performance for anybody, or are we talking about either neutral or performance improvements?
I would say neutral performance. The results don't necessarily show, like the power results don't show that. And I kind of explained why that might be. There was one participant, I said 5 out of 6 had performance improvement. The one didn't, both psychologically and physically. That could be performance decline. That could also be that the person has some meat in between them.
Right. So you're not, you right. don't love using their number anyway, because
I don't
problem there, right?
Right. Okay. Which is why in a perfect study, I would have done many more tests. I would have, how many is that total? Like 6 or 7 tests.
What do you think is like the sweet spot? Because obviously the more, the better. Again, in that scenario where you have all the money in the world,
yeah.
how many, what's kind of like the minimum number to really get like a fabulously scientific finding from this of participants?
Like of participants?
Yeah.
I think the number of 25 is really solid. Most studies about have like 10 to 15.
Okay.
I'd say anywhere over 15, you have really significant analysis going on.
So you don't need like 1,000?
No, I don't think so. What would be interesting to do is, so all the participants I ended up having were unintentionally all male cyclists.
Okay.
And
again, not your fault.
Right.
In a perfect world though, you definitely wouldn't have done that, right?
Right, exactly. And when I had 25 participants, I had lots of males and females. And it was across a range of ages. I had everyone from 14 to 18. And so that's what I'd like to do, because then I think you can analyze different demographics and how it affects them. And it just gives you more statistically significant results, and you can do better averages. Like an
right.
average percent improvement or decline or neutral would be a lot easier to do for a big participant pool like that.
So are you aware of other ways to buffer lactate?
I don't.
Buffer the hydrogen ions, I guess, the
this
acid.
This might just be a myth. Isn't beets, like eating beets? I've heard that's one.
That's kind of different. That just basically improves your nitric oxide, and like dilates your blood vessels.
There you go.
Are there any less gross vegetables that'll do that?
I would hope so, because I hate.
What if corn?
I have heard.
There you go.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with?
How about French fries?
Are you familiar with beta alanine?
I have. Yeah, I've heard of it.
Went to school with
and I've heard that's something that supposedly can do something similar. I don't know.
I don't think there's much research into that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that that can also have some pretty poor side effects, but like even more significant, like. Maybe it wasn't beta-alanine, maybe it was something else, but one of the very few other products that's, like, known
like
to...
carnosine or something?
Yeah, maybe it was that. It, like, will give you, like, numbness, and sometimes, like, permanent, like I've heard stories, like, people with, like, numb fingers, like, permanently, like, for years to come, sometimes it's kind of scary. I think baking soda is the one that's been used historically the longest, for sure, but...
No, I just want to kind of throw out there for, like... Well, my opinion on on topical bicarbonate is, and this is kind of, because I've actually like experimented with it myself, yeah. You know, I've kind of, and I actually kind of liked it.
Yeah.
I seem to have noticed a difference. Me too. I think that obviously the more intense the efforts are, the more beneficial it's going to be. Yeah. But I think for like a, for a cross country athlete, I think it's actually could be really worth exactly. considering, mostly because of like a cross country race start.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be producing lots of lactate. Your muscles are going to be really acidic during a cross country start. And I think it could be quite beneficial. You
for
know?
Sure. Even psychologically, like if your legs feel better, it's going to be more manageable.
You know, think for but, cyclocross.
Yeah. That might be but let right. me just throw out there that there is a way of buffering lactate that's way, 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 way better and more effective. And that's training.
There you go.
You know, exactly. Like
I can't buy training in a bottle for $40 then.
But like I was gonna say, I think that I do think that Amp Human's a good product. I do think that sodium bicarbonate is beneficial. I do think it falls under the category of marginal gains.
Oh, for sure, absolutely. And that's one thing I didn't mention that was a huge part of my project was marginal gains. And like, yeah, this is like. Amp Human is really for those cyclists who train so much that this is just like one more step.
They
up.
Just need a little.
It's a small improvement.
I'm curious. Did you find in the course of your research any reason to doubt any of the claims being made by Amp Human about this project, or to think that they are exaggerated?
I read a couple studies that said the 20% study was exaggerated.
Yeah.
There's this. He's a pretty famous lifestyle and health coach, doctor guy. His name's Peter Atia.
Oh, Peter Atia.
Atia. Yeah, I don't even know. Hey, that was a guess.
Yeah. He's rough.
That was a good guess, yeah.
Yeah.
He's worth listening to.
Yeah, that's
he's
what
he's an MD. He's like a real doctor. Yeah. Yeah. And he went to medical school.
He said that those 20% results are pretty significantly exaggerated.
Yeah.
And he said that he has no doubt that there's like performance improvement. Just not a 20% improvement, which yeah. I buy for sure. Like I buy that.
So tell me if I'm mischaracterizing this.
Okay.
This product does what it's supposed to do. It's marginal. It may or may not be worth it to you for what they're asking.
Right. Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
And it seems like it benefits some people more than others for whatever reason.
Whatever the reason that may be. I think the people that are going to benefit from it the most are, like you were saying, like XCO racers that train a lot.
Okay.
That have a lot of experience, because I think it'll just give you an extra edge, whether that's just in your comfort or your actual watts.
Yeah, I think like XCO, short track.
Short track would be huge.
You know, I think if I wouldn't use it as a triathlete, I don't think it's going to benefit you there. Just to kind of throw this out there, there are ways, and I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past, there are ways that you can train that also really help you buffer lactate and be able to tolerate more lactate. And honestly, surprisingly, the biggest one is zone 2 training, because when you do,
there it is again.
I know, I just can't, when you do zone 2 training, it actually, in your mitochondria, you have these MCT1 transporters that allow more lactate into your mitochondria. And that's one of the reasons Tadej Pogacar is so genetically gifted, because he actually has more of those transporters in his mitochondria than a normal person would. So he's able to utilize more lactate. And then on the other side of thing, your MCT4 transmitters in your fast twitch muscles, is you do like the really hard VO2 max type efforts. That makes it so those transmitters can allow more lactate out of those muscles. And so basically by doing polarized training, there's a really good argument for polarized training in it really helps you buffer lactate, because you're developing those different types of transporters on different ends of the spectrum. You know, a lot of people think you need to train right at threshold or do over unders and those just kind of teach you how to deal with it.
Yeah.
But the polarized training actually gets your body like the hardware to buffer lactate
better. Yeah.
you know, and I just want to throw that out there to people. Like, if you don't want to spend $50 on a bottle of lotion, just train a whole lot and it's going to, but it's probably
get your diet and exercise garbage out of here, Dan. I want a pill that fixes it. Okay. So this is a pretty nuanced measured findings you're giving us. Right. Like this doesn't, and I'm curious just through this whole experience, like, did this change the way that you look at research and the scientific process? Oh, do you have a bigger respect for it now?
It's hard. You have to control a lot. And you have to be really specific. Like you have to decide exactly who you want to test and what your criteria is for those people, and what you want to test on. And then you have to, like, you just have to really fine tune what you're going to do, and fine tune what you're looking for. And absolutely, it's given me much more respect for it. And it's made me more interested in it, honestly.
What do you want to study next?
I think a really interesting follow-up project, would be how differently it can improve. And this is just something I was thinking about, earlier this year, was how differently it could improve distance track athletes versus sprint track athletes. So maybe you take like a 1600 runner and you like have them use this lotion, and then you take like a 400 runner and see how they feel about it and how it affects them. And that would just kind of, spread the performance improvement across another aerobic discipline. My heart will always be with cycling. Don't worry, but it would be interesting.
You can research run. You could do a project like, why is running so boring?
That would be good. Actually,
how much, what percent more exciting is cycling for the same amount of
Why are runners so depressed? You know? Just kidding.
Yeah. Maybe. I just have to say, like, I know, cause we're running a little longer. Like this is super impressive.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, like I don't think we're in a place to be like super like critical of anybody that comes in here and like try to poke holes about saying or anything. Like you came in, like you were pretty like willing to be like, yeah, like X, Y, and Z, we could totally improve or change in this. Like this is like a really nuanced adult thing. Like this is super,
Thank
super
you.
Impressive.
I appreciate it.
I would love to see you do more research in the future.
Thank you.
Like this was really cool.
Yeah. Thank
Bravo.
You.
Bravo.
I appreciate it. Let me just throw in, I've been so impressed with Noah. Like, cause, we kind of texted and emailed back and forth a little bit throughout this, and I was just so impressed with how thorough he was. And, you know, if he doesn't get an A on this project, I'm going to be upset. But
he's... How funny would that be if you get like a C minus
yeah,
or something?
Exactly.
Like,
wow. I'm honored. Thank you.
Yeah. But he's done such a, I've been so impressed with, he's going to just watch out, world.
Yeah, watch out, world. This guy researches lotions, and he's out to get you.
Oh, I will get you. You better watch out.
Start calling you, like, can we get, like, a little sticker for your bike with an American flag that says Lotion Boy or something
there
like that?
There we go. I already have. I can put it over the sticker I already have.
We need to do T-shirts. The Maybird Lotion Boy T-shirt?
No, it's not.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming. This has been fantastic. You. If you ever end up doing more research in the future, let us know.
I think I might buy another tube of it just for fun.
Your own research project.
Mostly it just makes my legs look more tan for some reason. Yeah. But it gets them dirty.
Tan and muscular.
It makes them get dirtier.
It does. Like, dirt sticks to it.
Yeah, your legs look real. Like if you see someone's got like really, really dirty legs, they might be using it. And then if you're supposed to reply and they're already dirty, like,
oh,
that's kind
of. What happens a year from now when the UCI bans AMP Human Lotion?
There you go. Like, exactly.
We'll stock up.
We'll stock up on it. We'll have like a black market. That's how we like fund Maybird, by selling black market lotions.
Like, yeah, we'll like sell 5-hour energies. And
yeah, AMP. Exactly.
Just like at Nike races, like, hey, kid, you want to try some of this? And you just open up your like trench coat. It's full of like lotion and 5-hour energies. Thank you for coming. This
Thanks
has been fantastic.
Me. Appreciate it.
If anybody has any questions, can we direct if anyone has questions?
Absolutely.
Reach out to us.
Please do.
Maybe some follow-up on this if anybody's interested. Thank you guys for listening. Be safe this week. Look forward to seeing people out at the races, and we will talk soon.